On Thursday, the 23rd of August, Peter and Catherine Watts presented Purcell's Harpsichord Master. One of the treasures of Auckland Libraries is the only known copy of the Harpsichord Master, an early form of music tutor book for learners on the spinet or harpsichord, dating from 1697. Music by Henry Purcell, Jeremiah Clarke, and various other composers of the period is included in this fascinating little book. Much of the keyboard music in the collection is arrangements of airs from contemporary operas and popular songs. Here, Peter on the harpsichord and Catherine, soprano, give a complete performance of all the music in the Harpsichord Master, together with a commentary and some of the original works from which the pieces derived.
Many of you probably played that when you had pandanus as a child. Bach's Minuet in G has been in the teaching repertoire since it was first published in the Little Notebook for Anna Magdalena Bach in 1722. Actually, we don't know whether it was really written by Bach, but it was in a book compiled by him for his young second wife to help her keyboard studies. Music tutor books have been coming off the press for some years, since music printing first got underway in the late 15th century. One of the most celebrated is Thomas Morley's Plain and Easy Introduction to Practical Music.
And exactly a century after that book, and a quarter century before Bach's book, we find the Harpsichord Master, containing plain and easy instructions. Notice the words are similar to Morley's. For learners on the spinet or harpsichord, written by the late famous Mr. H. Purcell. The late famous Mr. H. Purcell had died just 2 years earlier in 1695.
The book was published by John Walsh, and as the first page indicates, was available to buy at the Golden Harp and Hautboy in Catherine Street and at the Golden Viol in St. Paul's Churchyard. It was thought that all copies of this book had been lost. All we had was the advertisements for it. But then a copy was discovered in the Auckland City Library, donated in 1937 by Claude Philip Guyon Purchase, the only extant copy of this publication. And that's the one you can go and look at for the next month in the reading room next door. Now, I'm a trifle embarrassed to be presenting this information to you today because the person who knows everything there is to know about the book is sitting here in the audience, and that's Robert Peter. Robert is a fine scholar and an excellent harpsichord player, so he could well be presenting this concert. Robert's introduction to his modern edition of the book is fascinating, and there are copies available for borrowing in the library, along with a beautiful facsimile of the original. The originals are only printed on one side of each page, but several pages have manuscript editions on the reverse side. So we find a couple of hornpipes, just solo musical lines. But the second half of this has a remarkable similarity to another famous hornpipe. Other nautical comments suggesting that the book's owner, because these were additions to the book that were written in by hand, suggesting that the book's owner was at some stage associated with the sea. There was also a rather cheeky poem. There was an alehouse man and had a fair wife. Unfortunately, while he was busy in the tap house, his wife had slipped upstairs with Roger the squire. And the poem ends with the warning, "Young men, for my sake, before it's too late, be sure and take care what woman you wed." Sadly, there's no music for that rhyme, nor do we know how it came to be written into this book. The pieces have been arranged in groups, in the same key, to create little suites of pieces. So I'm going to start, actually not at the beginning of the program, but I'm going to start by playing the suite in F major, which is pieces 8 to 12 in the program order. Two airs, followed by a minuet, a Scotch air, and a jig.
You may have realised that none of these pieces is by Purcell. So let's now return to the beginning of the book. First, we find a number of performance instructions. There will nothing conduce more to the perfect attaining to play on the harpsichord or spinet than a serious application to the following rules.
And there follow instructions on note names and scales. And then on note lengths and time signatures. And then rules for graces, ornaments, how to play the little trills that you want to add to your playing. There are some fascinating anomalies here, but you'll have to read Robert's book to learn about those. This is primarily a concert rather than a lecture, after all. The last instruction given before the music is a fingering chart. And this is quite a challenge for modern performers. You'll know how today we number our fingers from 1 to 5, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the other hand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Not so for Purcell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the left hand becomes rather complex to think about for a modern mind. And then if you've learnt piano, You'll know how we play scales using the thumb under technique. One, two, three, thumb goes under, and then two, three, four, five, and we play scales like this. We're not so according to Mr. Purcell's listing here, because here we go, one, two, three, four, then three goes under, three, four, three, four, three, four, three. Now if you can imagine playing a scale like that, one, two, three, four, three, four, three. For a modern performer, really rather complicated, but it makes sense of some of the paintings that we know from the time. Here, for example, is a picture that's used for a cover of a Fitzwilliam virginal book. And you can see what looks like a slightly awkward way the hand is held. Right? And this example, a young woman playing a virginal by Catharina van Hemessen, a 16th century Flemish painter, actually shows the third finger tucked underneath the fourth finger. So just an indication of that this is the kind of fingering that was used. And the last one of these ones, Vermeer, this is the lady seated at the virginal. And you can see how she has to have quite a high position of the hand to enable that slightly complex fingering, whereas with modern fingering we can keep our hands down and the thumb tucks under more easily. The very first piece in the book relates to these instructions. It's a prelude for the fingering by Mr. Purcell. You will see the fingering indications, and here's a close-up of it. And you'll also notice that there are actually six lines, which makes it a trifle complicated. Another confusion for a modern player, but again, fortunately, Robert's edition has got that sorted out for us. So here is Mr. Purcell's prelude, I hope with the correct fingering, which interestingly doesn't allow me to play a very legato melody, because I have to keep stepping with the fifth finger from note to note.
This is the only place where this piece is found attributed to Purcell. So Auckland City Library has been able to contribute a significant piece to the jigsaw puzzle of music history. And now follows another group of pieces in the key of C major, making a little suite in the same way as the F major suite that Peter played before. Many of the pieces were keyboard arrangements of songs. Piece number two is from Purcell's semi-opera, The Indian Queen. You may perhaps know another song from that same stage work, I Attempt From Love's Sickness to Fly in Vain. I attempt from love's sickness to fly. Oh, Here is a rather rudimentary arrangement of the air, "I come to sing great Zempoala's story." And in case you wonder if Zempoala is some glamorous girl, it's actually a place name. And the opera was The Indian Queen. The publisher has put Purcell's name to this, but only the melody is Purcell's. I don't think Purcell would have been very pleased with the simplistic and in places awkward arrangement. So here it is in its original version as a song.
The next piece is Mr. H. Purcell's new Cybele. Now, the Cybele was a trumpet tune based on an invocation to Cybele that occurred in Lully's opera Atys. This was premiered in 1676. First, Lully's original. And the style became fashionable with its trumpety tune and its dotted rhythms. And here is Purcell's creation. Now we move away from Purcell, and the next piece, The Duke of Gloucester's March, is by Jeremiah Clarke. And that is followed by a minuet by Mr. Morgan, about whom we know neither Christian name nor dates of birth and death. However, presumably he did live and did have a name.
for us to meet Thomas Durfee, poet, living from 1653 to 1723. He was a favourite of Charles II and a prolific writer of verse and music, mostly simple ballads, political songs, court songs, and country songs. He also had a fairly unusual profile, as you see, well known. One of his lasting legacies is a collection of songs called, delightfully, Pills to Purge Melancholy. Some are by Durfee, but many by other composers of the day. Some of these ditties were actually very challenging, having a very wide range, as you'll hear. Perhaps they felt easier and sounded better after quite a few glasses of ale at the tavern. Many of the country songs had numerous verses, and the text becomes more dubious as they go on, often about cuckolded men and the pleasures to be had by some behind the buttery or maybe in the dairy. Here is one of those. We're not going too far into the story. Jockey was as brisk and blithe a lad.
Jockey was as brisk and blithe a lad as ever did pretend to love a maiden true. But I feel that I should die of it and never taste the joys of love as others do. When the wars were lost, called him forth to arms, and the trumpet sound made the shores rebound. All that ever I could say to keep my lover was too little to confirm him here. And till he returns, I never shall give over mourning for the absence of my dear.
And here is Jeremiah Clarke's harpsichord arrangement of the song. Another gem from the Pills to Purge Melancholy is Hark the Cock Crowed, also by Jeremiah Clarke, and appearing in the harpsichord master as the countryman's duke.
Hark the cock crowed, 'tis day all abroad, and that's like a jolly fair morning. Up, Roger and James, and drive out your teams. Quick, let up, carry the morning. Davy the drowsy and Barnaby drowsy, at breakfast we'll flout and we'll cheer, boys. Sluggards shall chatter with salt beer and water, whilst you shall tow off the much beer, boys.
And there ends the first suite of pieces, all in the key of C major, and concluding suitably with that lively jig.
The second suite we've already heard, So now on to the third suite, the Bonnie Grey-Eyed Morn, another dearthy tune, but one of many that found its way into John Gay's A Beggar's Opera, which perhaps you know of. So here are the song and the keyboard version of that melody, followed by a new air by an unknown composer.
Now to another of Durfee's pills to purge melancholy, this time another air by the mysterious Mr. Morgan. 'Twas when the sheep was shearing. The suite concludes with an anonymous air and a round O minuet by Jeremiah Clarke. The round O is what we would now call a rondo, where a short theme returns after contrasting episodes. the final suite in the book, which is in the key of D minor. This suite combines pieces by Jeremiah Clarke and Robert King and contains some of the most sophisticated music in the book.
As you will now have noticed, Mr. Purcell, for all that he is credited with at the outset, is not represented with a great number of his own compositions. For Walsh, the important thing was Purcell's name and the authoritative cachet that it brought. However, the book is an interesting example of the kind of tutor books of the day, making use of some familiar tunes and drawing prestige by incorporating works or arrangements of works by leading composers. And it's a little jewel, and how wonderful that it showed up in the Auckland City Library. Since the book claims Purcell and makes use of his fame, we feel impelled to give him the last word. So to bring us full circle, we'll finish with a real celebration by Purcell of the power of music to move the heart. If music be the food of love.